It's crazy hard. It's crazy hard. It's good. It's good we waited until today to do this, because I don't think I could. This is the first time I've talked about it without actually getting choked up.
Hello and welcome to SynGap One Stories, hosted by me, Ashley Fry. Every couple of weeks, I spread information and awareness about a rare disease that affects my son Nathan. It's called SynGap One. I chat with parents, siblings, caregivers, and others about the challenges and successes of their journey with someone impacted by SynGap One. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, everybody. I have a repeat favorite special guest today. You all know him. It's Mike Gralia. I asked Mike if he wouldn't mind chatting with me because he very recently had an event happen in his family's life that just shook them all and has been extremely overwhelming and not quite debilitating, but pretty terrible. And I asked Mike if he wouldn't mind sharing some of that. He was very open and vulnerable in an email he sent to a handful of people within SRF. And when I read it, I just immediately texted him and said, all of my strength is with you. And I know that I am not the only person who reached out. And when I asked him if he wouldn't mind jumping on and sharing his story with me, of course he said yes. So this episode is going to be different and unlike most of all the other ones we've done so far, but I can't tell you how vitally important it will be for everyone else listening. Mike, do you want to share what happened last week?
Not really, but I like you, I think it's important that we talk about it and that we talk more about it. So today it's Monday night. And this happened on Thursday morning. Thursday morning was the first day of school out here in Marin County. And we have just moved to Marin County at the beginning of the summer. So it was a new school, right? And we had thought we had done everything possible to get set up for success for the first day of school. We could talk more about that. But basically, with everything in place, I took Tony to school on Thursday morning and walked into the learning center. So Tony's IEP specifies that he goes in and out of a gen ed classroom and into a learning center with special support. And that's what we had set up. And that's exactly what he had at the end of last year, 3 months ago in the town we used to live in. And the head of special ed was there. The learning center director was there, and a one-on-one aide who's an RBT was there. And anyone whose kid is getting ABA knows an RBT is a registered behavioral therapist and supposed to know what they're doing. So he's got a one-on-one aide, the head of special ed, the head of the learning center, and then there were like other therapists bopping in and out. And I sat there for like half an hour as they played together and everything was good. And I said, okay, guys, I'm going to come back at 11 to give him his medicine, because we hadn't done all the paperwork for Tony to get his 11 o'clock medicine. So they asked that I come back and give it to him. I was like, fine, I'll come back at 11. That'll be a nice touch point. So I scurried home to take a couple of SRF calls to do some work. And I was replying to an email from a parent in Europe about something. And I see the phone ring and it says the name of his school. And I'm like, oh boy. And I answer it. And they said, we need your help. I said, well, what's going on? They said, just come. Stopped writing my email, ran down the hill. Actually, I should check. I don't know if I ever finished that email. Ran down the hill. And I got to the office and they pointed at a door. And I opened that door. And Tony was on the ground sort of screaming and crying. He was face down in the prone position. He was being held there by the RBT, who I had seen 2 hours before, in an arm lock. And the head of special ed and the senior behavioral whatever were both sitting on the floor sweating profusely. And that was a lot to take in, but it is burned in my brain forever. And then I sort of, and sort of two things happened, right? So I focused on Tony, who was whimpering, and I sat down next to him and I said, let him go. And she let him go and he pounced on her. And he grabbed her hair and we had to pull him off. And then after that initial response, I just wrapped my arms around him and I held him and I just sat with him quietly. And after about it, because I wasn't saying anything to him, he wasn't saying anything to me, I was just holding him. And after a minute, they said, let us give you some time. I said, okay. And they left the room. And then just to paint the picture more, you know, we one of the reasons we moved here is it's very nice climate here. And when I meet Singap families who live in places that are very hot, I make a joke, because at the beginning, people aren't ready for all the news. I make a joke, you guys might want to think about moving to a cooler place because Singapians don't sweat. But it was nice outside. It was, you know, maybe in the low 70s. Maybe it was in the high 60s. It was a very pleasant day. That room was 85 degrees. It was sweltering. It was a small conference room that was baking hot. And after I calmed Tony down and was able to stand up, the first thing I did is look on the wall where there was an air conditioning unit and I pressed the on button all by myself. And, you know, that might have been a good idea. But the other thing, to paint that picture for you, in that room, it was a little school conference room, little table, 8-10 chairs around it. Five of those chairs were on the floor, and the floor was also riddled with decorations that had been ripped off the wall pretty recently. So there's clearly a lot had gone down in this room. And, you know, I was in shock. I didn't react to people. I needed to get Tony out of there. So he and I sat there for a while. We got the AC on. And I said, let's go home, Tony. And I held his hand. And we walked out. And sitting in the front of the office was the special ed director and the behavioral people and whatever. And the special ed director said, we should probably talk about this later. I said, yeah, let's talk about this later. And we left. And that was horrific. So I just want to talk about, there's so much to this, right? So before this, what had we done? Well, we knew we were moving here because we had so much great support in Palo Alto, where we used to live. We decided not to move until the summer. We wanted the boys to complete school there and then move here, which at the time seemed very smart, but in hindsight, not so smart, because what you do in the summer comes from all the preparation and networks you build in the school year. And by moving right at the end of the school year, we set ourselves up to spend the summer in a place where we didn't know people, where we didn't understand support, and where we didn't have ABA. And as soon as you move, your ABA gets broken and you have to register with a new company and insurance says no, and there's all this stupidity that ensues. But it takes 2 months. And in that 2 months, insurance doesn't pay for anything and your kid just suffers. So, you know, we moved here 3 months ago, and Tony's had no services, no friends. And we sent him to a couple camps, and some of them has gone well and some of them haven't. But one of those camps, this is what matters, was 2 weeks of ESY, which is summer instruction, right? And we sent him to ESY, and the first 2 days, they called me after 2 hours, like, Tony's acting out, he's not happy. And I went, and he was like eloping and saying no and being mean, but he wasn't like running amok. And both times I picked him up. And the second time I picked him up, one of the teachers was like, well, Tony did this, and Tony did this, and Tony did this. And I was sitting here staring at her and so surprised. So this is 6 weeks ago. And I was so surprised that she was talking to me about Tony as I was holding Tony's hand. And what I didn't say to her, because I was just processing everything, was like, a Singapian understands a lot more than they say. And I prefer it if you didn't speak to my about my son in presence of my son. And of course, I went home and I emailed her boss, who was special ed director. And I was like, hey, this just happened. And these people who are supposed to be taking care of special ed kids just tore up a special ed kid in front of him. And by the way, they said he wasn't calm. And it's a room for special ed kids. And there's no calm corner. Who the? has a special ed room without a calming cord. So, I, you know, 6 weeks ago, I sort of got into it with the special ed director. And she's an amazing woman, and she's committed, and she's talented, and she loves these kids. And she showed up the next day, and she spent the whole rest of those 2 weeks working one-on-one with Tony. So she knew Tony. And she knew that Tony could be regulated and present and taught something. And then, so it was... So, and then she was there on day one. So it's not like they're meeting Tony for the first time. So you have to ask yourself, and what, this is what I've said. How on earth did I leave a regulated kid in a quiet room with three specialists and I came back to a kid in the prone position in a hot conference room with three exhausted adults? What?
What time did you get that call? How long had he been there?
2 hours, 10:30.
Jeez.
It's nuts. And so what has happened since then? And then I think we need to talk about the implications of all this, because that's the good stuff. What's happened since then? Well, they suspended Tony. They were like, look, we 2 days off. We need to reorganize what we're doing over here. So he didn't get to go to school on Friday. He didn't get to go to school today. And today we had an emergency meeting with the whole team, you know, our people, their people, advocates, behavioralists, blah, 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 principal, to talk about how they'd get him back in. And we had a long talk. And basically, you know, we're going to do short days and I'm going to go. And the person who had him in the arm lock is not going to be there. And I want to make clear, I'm not here to slander this team or say they made huge mistakes. I think mistakes were made. But I think this team wasn't... mistakes were clearly made. But I think this team wasn't really fully prepared for a Syngapian. And I think that gets us to the first, and I don't really want to get into the blow by blow, but just at a high level, 2 hours in the classroom, he was great. Recess happened and they're like, Tony's doing great. Let's just let him go to recess. And then suddenly next thing, as the story evolves, I'm hearing it the next few days, he goes to recess. He starts attacking all these kids. He's gone wild on the playground. And then somehow magically he's not wild on the playground and they were able to walk him to a conference room. And then when he's locked in a hot conference room with three adults, all hell breaks loose. And I have said to them, I've been like, how did a child who's diagnosed with anxiety, on anti-anxiety meds, who craves social connection but cannot connect, who had a one-on-one aide, how did that kid get left unattended on a new playground in a new school with 1,000 new kids? Thought that was a good idea.
Recess.
Yeah. I mean, I just makes my blood boil. But, and they're like, look, he was regulated. He was happy. We didn't understand. And here's what else I didn't understand. You know what the whole thing was about? Food. Some kid had food and Tony wanted his popcorn. And the kid said no. And Tony said, I want it. And then the kid said no. And then Tony hit the kid. And that whole morning, all Tony was asking for was popcorn. Why was he asking for popcorn? Because he's been on the keto diet, with the modified Atkins diet, for the past 5 years to control his seizures. And suddenly he's let loose on a playground full of food. Am I saying Tony's blameless? Yes and no. Did he do stuff? Did he try to take a kid's food? Did he hit kids? Yes. Is it his fault? No. He's got Syngap 1. And you need to support these kids and structure these kids and give them steers on what's socially appropriate. But so... I think that the threads we can pull on here. Sorry, you should probably ask me questions because you've got me going now.
No. Nope. Keep going.
So the threads we can pull on are: the first day of school is hard for our kids. Period. Right. Even if you're going back to familiar school, to the same teacher, to the same learning center, to the same everything, maybe less so. But you got to remember, neurotypical kids get a lot of cool stuff to do for the summer, and they learn and grow. Special needs kids and our kids have precious little available to them. And they generally regress a little bit and get used to a much, much less demands being placed on them in the course of the summer. Mm-hmm. And so school is just a whole bunch of demands, right? That's problem one. So back to school is hard. New school is hard too. And I mean, we chose this school district because it is the best special needs school district in Marin County where we live. And it's like, there's a fine line between you are a paid professional. You are the director of special ed. You are a RBT, BCBA, whatever. You are a principal with 20 years of experience. You guys have all these degrees. I'm not going to tell you how to take care of a special needs kid. So part of you, like the well-behaved parent, wants to be like, you guys are pros. Thank you for your help. Here's Tony. Call me if you need me. And part of me is like, you have never seen this in Gapian before. This is another level. Before I give you my child, I want a meeting with everybody for 2 hours where I take you through everything, right? You can't do that because all these teachers are starting a new school year and they're like, you need to calm down, sir. We got this. And I erred on the side of, hey, you hung out with him at ESY. We have traded endless emails. You have reviewed his IEP. You visited his old school district. You've talked to his old special ed director. I think you can handle 3 hours on day one. I'll be back at 11. Seemed reasonable. But I was wrong. And now what happens, right? I got a kid who's just out of 2 more days of school. The RBT who was hired to take care of him for the year held him in an arm lock. And they were like, do you think we can bring her back tomorrow? I was like, no, she'll get her ass kicked.
No. Yeah, that's a really bad idea. What did he just learn here?
He just learned that this is the lady. I said, no, that's, you need to replace her. It's nothing against her. I'm sure she's lovely. But, you know, our kids, part of the molecular biology of SYNGAP and the disease evolution, and the neuroscience, I guess the neuroscience of SYNGAP is our neurons make a lot of connections, and then SYNGAPians don't prune like other people prune. Our kids are like GPSs. They remember everything. And they remember everyone. And after that kind of interaction, no, this cannot be the person who is Tony's link to the rest of the school. That's a really bad idea. And it's just been, you know, and so Tony was traumatized. But I got to say, I was traumatized. And Ashley was traumatized. I mean, once that happened on Thursday and I messaged Ashley, I said, hey, I'm picking up Tony and this is bad. She was like, I could barely think all day. You know, and I have been on the phone with, a psychiatrist. I've sent God endless messages in my chart. I've gone back and forth with my neurologist. And we basically all sort of sat like vegetables all weekend because Tony was traumatized. And it's like, did we screw up? Like, how could we have stopped this from happening? And I was traumatized. Like, seeing your son like that, you're like, you know, I've spent 5 years working on SRF to make the world better for SYNGAP kids. And then this happens to my kid. I'm not saying my kid needs special treatment, but I am saying I should know better. Why did I not have Tony on? Should I have just doped him up for day one? Should I have given him more?
No, I think the bigger problem is that like after 2 hours of being fine, the guardrails were just completely tossed out the window. That, to me, is the bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also a big problem with, well, there's so many big problems. But I think as our kids get bigger and stronger, you have to remember, our kids don't feel pain. Like when you get, if you've ever been punched or slapped, you're like, ooh, that hurts. And then before you do that to someone else, you're like, wow, if I hurt them, they might be mad. If you punch or slap a SYNGAPian, they'll be like, oh, because they barely feel it. So when they punch or slap, what do they think they're doing, right? So, and then the trouble is Tony's 85 pounds. He's been on modified Atkins diet, which means high fat, high protein, no carbs for 5 years. Boy is lean and strong. And you know, one of our members of our community, one of the leaders I shared with on Thursday, Jackie can't see her. Her daughter is a young adult, I think. And, she's really wise. She's really articulate. And she wrote back to me almost immediately. And her message was so on point. Let me just pull it up real quick. She said, oh, Mike, I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, as more and more of our diagnosed patients start getting older, I truly feel we will see this exact scenario replicated again and again. The general medical field is not ready for SYNGAP1 dysregulation. Treating with common practices for autism, agitation, or even bipolar schizophrenia just won't touch it. This is the point. SYNGAP1 is in a class of its own. and we need doctors, and I would inject their therapists, etc., who are willing to recognize these novel cases and think outside the box. And then she goes on and she says the name of the game is keeping her as stable as possible with high levels of appropriate medication to calm the synapses. I agree. Oh, this is a key point. Only qualified, trained adult support present. And then she says quality over quantity. As even one person who has the wrong tone or body posture can trigger her. And then a balanced environment that provides enough mental stimulation to keep her from being bored, but not so much sensory stimulation that it overwhelms her. And then, no, it gets better. She's so smart. And then if any of those three elements are missing, she destabilizes. This is the analogy I love. A snowball becomes an avalanche very quickly. So I have learned to be hypervigilant to the fall of the first snowflake, so to speak. And, you know, with Tony, the first snowflake was a bag of pirate's booty, right? He wanted this kid's food. And there was no one there to be like, no, Tony, or to hold Tony and say, hey, can you give Tony three pieces of popcorn? Because then I'll be happy. If that kid had been like, here's three pieces of popcorn, never happened. But you can't say, hey, some third grader didn't share his popcorn. Right? That's not real life.
Right.
But
also, to me, like, I'm thinking about, what about all the allergies? I mean, I've never been around a recess where food is just allowed, available. That's problematic.
Well, I mean, yeah, I could see both sides of that. I'm not here to fault the school. I'm just here to say Singapians are tricky. And as parents, I'm realizing that I need to do more work to educate the school and to insist on the one-on-one aid. And this is Jackie's point about quality over quantity, right? I don't need a warm body to stand there. That would be better than what happened. But I need someone who is skilled to be close to him and who gets him. If the director of special ed had been standing next to him, I don't think this would have happened. But she's the director of special ed. She can't stand next to every new kid, right? So it's like, I always think about the whole community. I always extrapolate this. And I think as Tony has had this traumatic, trauma with a little t, this traumatic summer of like, we changed his house, we changed his environment, we tried to send him to a bunch of new camps, some worked, some didn't. All this change. And then we sent him to a brand new school. And shame on me, I thought 30 minutes was good. I should have just written off that whole day to hang out on. That is on me. But that I just didn't remind myself that as he gets bigger, Tony acting out is really scary. And then the second arrow here, the compound fracture, the whatever, is on the first day of school after 2 hours. The impression of Tony of so many teachers and kids is that kid who went nuts. And it just, now we have to do all this relationship repair and starting over. And I just don't want our kids to suffer like this. Because the person who suffered the most here is Tony, right? So maybe I should have given him extra Lexapro that morning. Maybe I should, you know, ask the psychiatrist for But, you know, a drug for agitation, they wouldn't have had time to give it on the playground. In that conference room, maybe they would have. But then, you know, if you ask your psych for lorazepam, they'll give you lorazepam. It's a tiny pill, slip it in, 10 minutes later, the kids chill. If you give that to a school, well, what's going to stop them from just giving it to him every day? Oh, 10 o'clock, lorazepam. You don't know that until they call you back and say, hey, we're out of lorazepam. And you're like, I gave you 30 pills a month ago. What happened? That hasn't happened, to be clear, but that's my concern. I'm just so sad and traumatized that we're now. I need this, like I need a hole in the head. I have so much going on, and yet it is the most important thing, right? So here we are, trying to figure out how to support Tony.
So, Kappa, she's not in school, huh? She's not in school with Tony.
Service dog? No. No, yes. That, again, so here's the thing with Tony, right? His medicine at 11. Well, we need a whole board policy to give him that. We got, you know, you got to fill out his forms, blah, 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 and come back. Service dog. Oh, let's get Tony settled in school and then we'll bring the service dog. Now, if Tony had had a service dog at his side on day one, would this have happened? Probably not. Right? Probably that kid would have been like, hey, who's your dog? Have some popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's, our kids are complex and you either... And if you bring all the appropriate supports, the one-on-one aid, the service dog, the whatever, the schools are like, whoa, we don't have time for this. And it's hard to say to the school. And what I should have said to the school is find the time because, you know, it's like that. I think Kennedy said it. Like, why is there always time to do things over but never time to do things right the first time?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Why didn't I say to them, this child is complicated? I can ask this and answer it. This child is complicated. When things go wrong, they go really wrong. Let's please really sit down and work on this. Why didn't I say that? But A, I don't want them to be afraid of Tony. Like, if you have a good relationship with Tony, things don't go wrong. And to be clear, what happened that day has never happened before. No one in a school setting has had to restrain Tony. No one has called me and said, Tony ran around a playground attacking people. Although I feel like that was rounding up. No, like... This was a first, and it happened because after that first snowflake fell, as Jackie says, mm-hmm. the people piled onto the snowball instead of saying, you want popcorn? I've got popcorn, Tony. Let's go to the teacher's lounge and get popcorn, right? Or saying to that kid, can I have a handful of popcorn, please? Or just paying mm-hmm. enough attention to Tony to be like, what's the issue?
Mm-hmm. So something you've said something in two separate contexts that I kind of want to create a little bow here. We have many fine lines with our Syngapians, and there's a very fine line between the triggers for any of them, what will set them off. It's just a little touch over what normally wouldn't set them off. And then also the fine line between how to be the respected, likable, not too overbearing parent with the school district and the administration, but also advocating to the extent that is necessary and training and informing and providing all the supports for our children in these school settings. It's almost impossible. You almost can't be the perfect advocate for every single thing that our children need in school settings, while also not ticking everyone off who works in administration or just being seen as the difficult parents.
Well, there's another problem there. There's another problem. The right place for our kids is hard to find. And what we're trying to do, and the reason we're all being so well behaved, is because we're looking for that place, right? Our kids crave social interaction. Yeah. Our kids want friends. They can be in an inclusive setting, but they need power, you know, well-trained, thoughtful, creative, behavioral people and one-on-one support. And the trouble is our system is built for kids who were mildly affected in the gen ed setting or severely affected. And they get shoved off to other schools where maybe there is nice settings and behavioralists, but there's little to no academic opportunities. So it's like, where do you go? Do you go to the place that's heavily behavioral and ask them to incorporate some education for that kid? Or do you go to the place that's got other kids and got education, but ask that they bolt on more behavioral support than they're used to? So that the crack there is massive.
Yeah.
And we're falling right through it. But I think, this is not a threat, but I'm done being nice. Like, I am going to insist on mm-hmm. more things. And this, because I've seen what happens when I don't. And the other thing mm-hmm. is, this is so much work. it takes time. Mm-hmm. You got to request meetings. You got to send emails. You got to, you know, you someone's like, you hire an advocate. You hire an advocate. They're like, you have to hire a behavioral whatever. They hire a behavioral whatever. And they're like, oh, you probably also need a, where's your BCBA? And then you got to file with insurance for your BCBA. You know, and all of that takes time and money. And if you don't spend that time and money, what happens is things go wrong with your kid and you find out about mm-hmm. it and you're heartbroken, or you don't find out about it. And then all of a sudden, I'm pulling from the community. I know of one child who was getting locked mm-hmm. in a closet, and mom never found out until someone else told her.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that is striking too is that some of us live in places where there's not a whole lot of options for where you can choose to send your child. Many of us don't live in areas that have multiple school districts nearby.
Right.
Many of us don't have resources to move to where there are more or better resources. And so sometimes it's a matter of putting on the nice face and being pleasant and easy to deal with so that our only option doesn't go away or become problematic.
But that's If you feel like you've got to be nice, then my thinking is, I said I'm done being nice. I'm still going to be nice, but I'm going to be insistent. I'm going to be annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be like, look, where's his one-on-one aid? How are we getting ready for next year? Are we doing all we can? Because, you know, that one option cannot go away. I mean, depending on the school district, they can play dirty tricks, but you can play dirty tricks too. You can just hire a lawyer. And I think that, I don't have data on this. We should do a survey. But many of our adult or older Sangapians have advocates and lawyers and have some kind of... I expected to have tension with the school district when Tony was older. But I didn't define older as 9. You know? And so what this has done for me is sort of snapped me out. Like, Tony is now... None of these kids get simpler. And when I'm talking to newly diagnosed families, you know, especially now that the diagnoses are coming in like 2, 3, 4, I get all these young parents who are like, oh, maybe my kid won't be so bad, or, oh, that hasn't happened yet. Oh, and I'm like, buckle up. Like, it's coming. And I don't want to pile onto their grief, but those early years are a precious time to build support and allies in the education system, because your kid's going to get older and stronger and they're going to outgrow meds. And just like what happens to Tony on Thursday, there will be moments where they fall through a crack. And the trouble with a Sangapian is when things go wrong, they get aggressive. And when they get aggressive, people start writing reports and suspending and
mm-hmm.
And you got to remind them, this kid is precious.
Something that I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago is that when Kevin and I first called you after we learned Nathan's diagnosis and found SRF, I was still somewhat in denial. And at that point, you know, he only had the myoclonic seizures and, you know, was significantly behind all of his milestones. But I wish you had, like, come through the phone and shaken me and said, I know that you think that it might not be Nathan. That's not your kid now. But you need to step into reality here and realize his life is not going to look like what it looks like now. In 6 months, in 1 year, in 5 years, it's going to look like all of these other examples. And we know this because we have older Sangapians to look to now. And I was so, man, I don't know, maybe I was just trying to hold on to what little glimmer of hope I thought there was, because he wasn't very severe at that time. But I wish he would have just slapped me. Because I probably could have mentally prepared better and gotten with it a little sooner.
Yeah. what you just said is, I remember that conversation really well. You and Kevin were standing there, and there was a phase where I was talking to every newly diagnosed family, and I think I said something, I was a little too honest with some family. I think it was Pavel called me. He's like, you can't talk to new families anymore. Because I freaked somebody out, and they went and talked. And I always tell people, you got to talk to this people. And then she went and cried to someone, and then Pavel had to, you know, when Pavel calls me, I know I'm in trouble. Because that's when they send in the hammer. And I was like, all right, dude. But look, no one else, first of all, half our clinicians have never seen a SYNGAP before. So they don't even know to say it. But they've seen enough kids with NDDs that they understand things get more complicated. That is my euphemism for they get bigger, they get stronger, the seizures get more pronounced, you need more meds, they have more side effects. It's a cluster, right? And you don't want to say to somebody, oh my God, it's going to be a disaster, because we do have a broad phenotypic spectrum, and they might be one of the, you know, very few who have a milder phenotype, but 95 to 99% of our parents they're grieving. And, you know, denial is a really helpful way to limit the pain at the beginning. There's only so much pain anyone can take, and you don't want someone to go over the edge. I didn't know how incredibly strong and resourceful you were at that moment. And had I known you the way I know you now, I'd have been like, you know, Ashley, right. And the other thing is, guess what? There is one SYNGAP1 community. And what I can't do to someone is traumatize them so much in that first call that they say, forget it. These people are weird. That guy's mean. They end up saying I'm mean anyway, but it takes time. So, you know, it's a balance. And I used to really get mad at the clinicians. I'm like, why? Just like you said to me, why did my pill not sit me down and tell me to get on this sooner? But now I'm like, oh no, I understand, because they didn't want me to stop talking to them, because they knew that I needed them. Just like I knew that you and every other newly diagnosed parent I meet needs this community more than they could ever understand. Like, that's the punchline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about fundraising.
100%.
The people who are going to raise money are going to raise money. It's not about, I need you in Citizen. Like, if you're not smart enough to sign up for Citizen, I don't want to talk to you. But it's about, I know that you need to be here. And what I want you to do is meet enough people as fast as possible, get on the groups, listen to these podcasts, and figure it out as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. We have to speed up the journey from deep denial and grief to, oh my God, this is serious, to what can I do? Because guess what? If we don't do it as parents, no one else is going to.
It's not happening. No.
No one else.
It won't happen. Maybe my new mantra for new families will be prepare for the worst. Learn what the worst is. Prepare for the worst. And hope for the best.
Yeah. But that's so linear. Right?
It is.
I mean,
it minimizes how complex everything is.
It does, and that's my point, right? Because with Tony, it's like, last year he was really well managed on a certain cocktail. CBD and modified Atkins for his seizures, guanfacine and Lexapro, and melatonin for his anxiety and sleep. That cocktail's not working. He's outgrown the modified Atkins. He's starting to want other food, right? The modified Atkins goes away. You have to put another anti-seizure drug in. You put another anti-seizure drug in, you have a whole other world to deal with. The guanfacine and the Lexapro, it's not enough anymore, right? And I called his psych after this happened, and I said, well, and she recommended a very strong drug, and I was like, we have just gone from the shallow end to the deepest end. Like, and by the way, that drug's lots of weight gain. And metabolic issues is like the only issue Tony doesn't have. I'm like, can we be a little more creative? Because these, God bless him, like, we could not function without these psychiatrists. Every SYNGAPian's got a neurologist. Not every SYNGAPian has a psychiatrist or a developmental ped. And we need those two. That's part of the complexity, right? When I have these first meetings, people are like, my neurologist said. And I'm like, well, what did your psychiatrist say? And they're like, I don't need a psychiatrist. I'm like, yes, you do. You just don't know it yet. right? So wow! this is my son John, who is joining the podcast. John,
please, hi John, please. Do you remember me?
He can't hear you, but my little pterodactyl, my little pterodactyl, you're so cute. I love you. But you know, because anxiety in a 3-year-old just looks like crying, but anxiety in a 9-year-old is a fist. Where do we draw that line, right? When do we say you need a psychiatrist now? I feel like so many SYNGAP families have called me and to talk about seizures, and I've said, well, what anti-anxiety drug are they on? Oh, they're not. Oh, well, right. Guess what? The whole world is anxiety-inducing for our kids. Yay! So if you can't change the world, help them with the anxiety. And in Tony's case, I think in part he's outgrown either his dose or his med. But the doctors are reluctant to change those meds until there's an event. And all we're doing here is sitting here working against an event.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctors and the behaviorists, they don't have meetings. That's on us.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that the hardest part about all of this is that it is ever-changing. As soon as you get used to one thing working, one cocktail of drugs, one routine, one classroom setting, something's going to change. Our kids are going to grow. They're going to outgrow particular medications. They're going to develop new seizure types. They're going to change schools or have summer break. ESY is not... We were told this year, or this past summer, that Nathan didn't qualify for ESY because he had made significant enough improvement where he didn't need it. And it's just like, wait a minute, but do you not understand the routine of everything and how, you know, that affects his ability to retain information and keep doing well? It's, I don't know. It's so hard. It is relentless and completely difficult all of the time. And nobody quite understands like we parents do.
But my response, so my response to that ESY point is important. It's like they say to you, he's made so much progress, he doesn't need it this summer. You have to be like, look, this is not a child with a behavior that we've corrected. This is a child with a known medical neurological deficit who is going to get bigger. And to the extent we mm-hmm. have gained any ground in the past school year, we need to build on that success. Because guess what? He's going to get... And this is where the cold, hard truth, this is a chance to productively say to the school district, do you understand they are going to get bigger, stronger, and more complicated? And if you think he's regulated right now and easy to work with, that's when you build on success, right? That's when you introduce right, exactly. more staff. That's when you build Team Nathan or Team Tony or Team whatever. But these kids are...
You know what the other part about it too? Yeah. Is like in Mississippi where we are, our ESY programs are only 2 weeks. 2 weeks out of a 3-month summer break.
They're 2 weeks here
only
too.
Offer 2 weeks.
Same here.
It is ridiculous.
It's the bare minimum. And it's, you know, in talking to the advocate in our emergency advocate meeting on Friday, she's like, actually, there's a whole other thing you can ask for over the summer that's like not even ESY. You can say ESY is not enough. But you don't learn that stuff until you have these horrific meetings. I mean, it's so hard. And I think managing behaviors and managing school districts is... it's a whole other thing that parents have to figure out. And I just wish every parent, I want every parent to know that they need to begin a polite but insistent relationship with the school district as fast as possible. The school district has to know that your kid is exceptional, is gonna, and if we don't start working in partnership now to build support around them, they're going to get harder. So what do you got? And are you sure you don't got more? And then no matter how much of an inconvenience or an expense it is, I think getting a trained advocate in there to help you fight is essential. And I think mm-hmm. as SRF, we need to, you know, we raise money for and spend money on science. But, you know, at some point, we're going to need to think about how we advocate for our community and or empower the parents to advocate. Because they're, you know, people are like, give me a memo on SYNGAP. We didn't have that until Jackie Cancier just wrote it for a mom in I don't remember which state right. that was. But, you know, we have yeah. to make all these things. And it's coming back to the Jackie can't see. It's all about Jackie. When we went through that exercise and we called very senior academics, autism experts, blah, 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 and said, could you please give us a letter or a memo or point us to a publication that explains that SYNGAP is different than just autism? Both of them came back with the same answer, which is obviously like the academic dogma. Look, every child is different and they need to be assessed and understood by the local behaviorist and framed that way. And I was like, how much do I hate that answer? Because yes, every child is different, but these children have SYNGAP. And guess what? There's like this many of us who understand SYNGAP. So we know they perseverate.
Right.
We know they have to complete. We know they are highly anxious. We know that they aggress as a form of communication. We're not going to say that to these behaviorists. We're not going to warn them what's coming. But then you don't want to, right. you don't want people, you don't, how do you, this is the heart of it for me. How do I educate you about Tony and help you understand that Tony is beautiful and can be supported and can learn and can grow, but at the same time warn you that if you screw up and you trigger Tony and you push him the wrong way, he will respond with aggression and it will not be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get yeah. that through your head without making you afraid of my son?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Because if you're afraid of him, he'll know it and you won't stand a chance.
Yeah, forget it. No, Tony is a lovely, lovely child.
Yeah.
I had a blast with him.
But Syngapians are tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not know. And, you know, thank God, I feel like mistakes were made on Thursday, and today we had a meeting with the school district, and they're like, how are we gonna get him back in? How are we gonna work on this? Like, they are good people, but we as a team, the parents and the advocates and the school staff, got caught off guard by the incredible anxiety that we created in Tony on the first day of school.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're paying attention, but I wish it didn't. I wish it hadn't.
Now they want
to
hear from you.
Yeah, but it.
Yeah.
It was an unfortunate way to get here.
Is he going back tomorrow? Tomorrow's Tuesday.
We are going back tomorrow. I will be with him for the rest of the week, or until he decides that he wants to be there without me.
Yeah.
Which is going to screw up my week, but it's got to be done. Got to help.
Small sacrifices for the better good.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, Mike, I know that it's not easy talking about this stuff. It weighs so heavy on us. And I know that you had an outpouring of support from our community. I hope and I know that people who listen will learn a lot from this and this is going to be a very moving thing for all of us to listen to and refer back to and share with people who haven't heard it, who are going through a hard time. So thank you so much for opening up.
Yeah. And my ask for the parents listening is that if any of this resonates, they share it, you know, in the group.
Absolutely.
In a blog, on another interview, like the only way, because we're spread all over the country. The only way we're going to help each other, because we can't all go to the conference and you can only talk to so many people at the conference. Someone just messaged me. They're like, I just booked my tickets from Europe. I'm coming to the conference. I can't wait to hang out with you. I have so many questions for you. I was like, if you have questions for me, we should talk now because the conference is going to be nuts. It'll be people wall to wall and like none of us are going to have time. So I can't wait to see you and let's talk now because it's going to be a very busy time. But, you know, the only way we can really support each other is by being vulnerable and talking about the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how the newly diagnosed families are going to have a sense of how this life is. Like, you fall madly in love with these kids, you see their potential, you want them to do as much as they can, and sometimes the world just gets too much, and sometimes, even from the best of intentions, we place too many demands on them, and they respond, and that response is hard.
Oh, it is hard. Well, thank you so much.
Anytime.
For always being willing to share and help.
If
you ever need me, you know I'm here.
Well, you saved me this weekend. I was supposed to go to the soiree and you stepped in. Apparently you did a better job than I was going to, so it's great. I'm off the hook forever. No,
I don't know about that, but okay.
We'll talk to Suzanne.
All right. Yeah. Well, if anybody's wondering about what Mike is talking about, I'm going to put out a special episode in the coming weeks. You guys all have gotten used to seeing Mike in SynGap 10 and hearing me in SynGap stories, but I'm going to do an actual video recorded episode in a few weeks where we actually share, I don't know if we're going to share the entire or clips of that speech, which, it was hard and it took a lot out of me, but I'm so glad I did. And I've had so many people both at the event and over social media and texts this week say how powerful it was. So I will share that in a future episode. So keep listening. Thank you all, and we will catch you again next time. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us wherever you're listening. For more information about today's guest and SynGap 1, please check out our show notes. Your suggestions are always welcome. Please email us at ed@curesyngap1.org.